What's going on, everybody? This is Nico, and you're listening to yet another edition of your favorite podcast in the whole wide world. This is the Nico Show for Friday, October 11th, 2019. What's going on? I'm Nico. I'm your host. And folks, I don't know about you. Well, of course I don't know about you. I've never met you. I mean, that should be self-evident, right? You're just an anonymous life force somewhere in the galaxy called the audience. I can't put a name or a face to you. You're just you. Really, you're just me, because no one's actually listening. So I'm just talking to myself. Regardless, I don't know about you, but this took a weird turn very early. So, I'm getting uber existential today. It's a Friday. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know about you, but I am fascinated by people that spend a lot of time doing nothing. And I don't mean like the dude from Big Lebowski. I'm not talking about that guy. Gets high all day, goes bowling, watches Columbo reruns on TV Land. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the people that work very hard, that go to meticulous lengths to achieve nothing of importance whatsoever. I am fascinated by the people that spend their whole lives, that devote all the time and energy in the world to complete tasks that no one would deem as productive. I am fascinated by that. I think I was talking about this a couple months ago, as a matter of fact, when I was in DC and I went to the Smithsonian and I saw this elaborate structure in one of the art museums that was constructed out of aluminum foil and Tupperware. And that was it. And it was this massive palace that a crazy person spent 12 years of his life making in his garage. And he never showed it to anyone. And then one day he died and his neighbor went in his house and was like, oh, look at this thing. Maybe I should call a museum and put this somewhere because it's certainly interesting. But the guy that made it had no motivation other than he wanted to make it. He didn't want to put it in a museum. He didn't want to sell it. He was just making it to make it. The process was the reward. And I find that so freaking fascinating, because anybody can make something for credit. You know what I mean? It's so easy to make something for the glory, for the money, for the fame, for the fortune. Anyone can do that. It takes such commitment and drive to, for example, make a ship in a bottle. No reason to make a ship in a bottle other than to make it. Look, I get to put it on my mantle now. Like, it is, I imagine it's an impossible task making a ship in a bottle. I would never wish it upon my worst enemy. But to the person that spends months and months of their life, you know, mixing the super glue, using Q-tips and tweezers to construct a sail, you know, that is so fascinating. I love that shit. So, long story short, this week I said, what meaningless task could I do just for the sake of doing it? Because I spend so much time making things for other people to consume. I make podcasts because I want people to listen. I write things that I want to get published. You know, I do everything for the credit, everything for the attention. What could I do just for the sake of doing it? What skill could I learn that has no practical application whatsoever? And I mean none. What skill could I learn that would be fulfilling in and of itself, right? So I said, I know. I'll learn how to solve a Rubik's Cube. No reason other than, yeah, I think it'd be cool to solve a Rubik's Cube. So we have a Rubik's Cube laying around. I think it was my brother's he got years ago. I don't know if he ever learned how to solve it. I think he tried learning how to solve it once and then gave up. By the way, this is not like a new thing. Like, most people at the age of 10 to 12 in their youth, maybe they're a brainiac, they're in the science club, They're on the debate team. They're like, yeah, I want to prove that I'm a brainiac and solve a Rubik's Cube. You know, maybe I'll get into Mensa one day. So in most young people's lives, this phase is long gone. But for me, that phase is at age 24. So I got the Rubik's Cube and I went on YouTube and I watched a tutorial, and it is very confusing. It is way more complicated than you would think. Like, I expected the video to be like 5 minutes long, and it was 25 minutes long. And I had to pause it and rewind it, and I kept making mistakes, and I had to go back and fix those mistakes. The problem with the Rubik's Cube, you'll find, people, if you are so inclined, is that if you make one mistake, you can't just reverse the mistake. You have to start all over again. Because each step is so meticulous. It's a math problem. And, like, if you've ever done math homework and you're solving long algebra or whatever, you're trying to simplify fractions or simplify equations, you make one mistake along the way, the whole thing is wrong. There's only one right answer. You can't arrive at that answer through different means. You have to just do it. So I made plenty of mistakes, but after 2 hours, I, with the help of the Wired magazine YouTube channel, completed my first ever Rubik's Cube. And now, again, with some notes, I think I can do it. I think I can do it after 24 hours. Now, it takes me a while. It takes me a good 5 to 10 minutes, and there's no guarantee that I won't make mistakes and have to start all over again. But I understand the general premise of solving a Rubik's Cube. So I just wanted to tell you that Nico can now solve Rubik's Cubes. What you're supposed to do with that information, I don't have the slightest idea. Because frankly, folks, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with that information. Like, there's no charity work that I can now do as a result of this. There's no starving children on the streets of urban America who are like, sir, will you please solve my Rubik's Cube? There's no diseases that I'll be able to cure. There's no better understanding of the world that I have. It's just a meaningless skill. It is useless. Like, it won't even help me get laid. Like, are you ever out at the bar? You look down the way, there's a smoking hot dime piece around the corner. And you walk up to her and you go, hey, babe, want to see me play with my Hasbro toy? I could solve this thing under 90 seconds. Like, that's not supposed to work. What use is this? Why? Why do I now have this skill in my brain? I'm just taking up valuable real estate. You know what I mean? Like, I could learn 3 other different languages with that brain capacity. I could learn how to play an instrument. I could write poetry. I can learn what the word decorum means, you know, and I'm taking up that real estate with a useless skill, but I did it, and now I'm happy about it. So again, I can't explain to you the science. I'm not sure I recommend learning how to solve a Rubik's Cube, but there is something strangely therapeutic about picking up a skill like this. There is something, there's something very satisfying about a skill with no necessity whatsoever. Give it a shot. Do yourself a favor this weekend. Go online, learn how to do something. I don't know what it is, just learn it. Because I think by the end of it, you'll be like, hey, I can do that now. And that's good enough for me. This is the Nico Show. Man, we got a lot to get to today. I have a funny little bit later on, or I hope you'll find it funny. I don't know. I guess you'll be the judge of that. I have a bit for later on in the program you may enjoy. We're going to talk politics because there are many a controversy in the world. Controversy is brewing, and there's one in particular that has captured my attention as well as the nation's. And we're going to talk about that right after this break. So it's the Nico Show. Hope you stick around. It's going to be a fun show today. We'll be right back. So obviously, I really want to talk about this NBA thing because it's basically the only thing I followed this week. It's crazy. This story has captured my attention in a way that no other sports story, actually, never mind sports story, no other story, period, has done in a very long time. I just think it's super fascinating, and there's so many ways to come at it, and it's super informative, and it's super educational, and it's a great argument to throw at people who don't care about sports. You know, this is a great argument for paying attention to the NBA, NFL, and MLB, because sports often dovetails into other sectors of life. What these leagues do and what these players do, what these franchises do, often have major financial consequences and cultural consequences and social consequences and political consequences. And we saw all of that in this giant clusterfuck this week with NBA and China. And, you know, if you're not aware of what's going on in Hong Kong, like I was, I'll be honest, like I had a superficial understanding of what was happening over there, but I didn't really dig deep until I saw Daryl Morey's tweet and the fallout from Daryl Morey's tweet. But sports is a good way in. It's a good looking glass to sort of see the world through. And we're going to learn a lot. We are already learning a lot about the National Basketball Association and the people that run it. And we're going to learn a lot more as the weeks go on. So let's get into this. And I, by the way, I do want to apologize. I'm going to be complimenting Donald Trump in this segment. Just know that in advance. Just know that's what you're getting into. I'm going to be sounding a lot like Rush Limbaugh today. And that's not purposeful, but you know what, guys? Sometimes Donald Trump is right. I know. These instances are few and far between. Once in a blue moon, a Smurf is born and Donald Trump has a good point. But this week, the man does. So I'm going to give him that, and then we're going to move on. This has nothing to do with the ongoing impeachment inquiry. This has nothing to do with his immigration policy, with pulling out of Turkey. Has nothing to do with that shit. I'm just saying. Donald Trump was right about the NBA. You know what? Actually, let me put it this way. It's because it's not just Trump. This is how you know the NBA fucked up. When you go on Twitter and Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz have written identical tweets. When Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz are indistinguishable from one another, that's how you know the NBA fucked up. Look no further. Beto O'Rourke, who built a political career on being an alternative to Ted Cruz, is 100% in agreement with the man. That's how you know, NBA, you done blew it. Let me read the two tweets. Again, indistinguishable. Beto, this is what Beto said. The only thing the NBA should be apologizing for is their blatant prioritization of profits over human rights. What an embarrassment. And then you go to Ted Cruz. Again, this was the same night. Within like an hour of each other. Here's Ted Cruz. As a lifelong Houston Rockets fan, I was proud to see Daryl Morey call out the Chinese Communist Party repressive treatment of protesters in Hong Kong. Now, in pursuit of big money, the NBA is shamefully retreating. The exact same tweet. Everyone's in agreement. The NBA done fucked up. This is the single most unifying issue since World War II. Shake hands with your enemies. It's a Christmas miracle. So if you're not familiar with what's going on, I will do my best to explain this in an even-keeled fashion. Now, I will insert my opinion from time to time. I will editorialize because it's my show and that's what I do. And I cannot promise that I won't raise my voice on occasion. Because I'll admit, I'm big enough to say this. I got triggered by this story. And I'm not usually the triggerable type. I'm usually pretty pretty emotionless and stoic when it comes to world affairs. But this one really pissed me off. So I may be coming for scalps today in the NBA. Right? I may be biting some heads off on today's program. Anyway, let's rewind. Last week, a week ago, today as a matter of fact, Friday, October 4th. Daryl Morey, the general manager of the Houston Rockets tweeted out an image, and that image read, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." Now, I did not see this tweet in my Twitter feed because I don't follow Daryl Morey. But had I seen this tweet, and had I identified Daryl Morey as the tweeter, I don't think I would have thought twice about it. This just feels like fairly innocuous Twitter activism. It's run-of-the-mill, it's standard stuff. Had I seen it, not known the context, I swear I just would have kept scrolling. But evidently, there's a lot more context. And the tweet set off a firestorm. China is not happy with Daryl Morey's point of view on Hong Kong. Now, if you don't know what's going on in Hong Kong, as I said earlier, you are not alone. But let me just give you the cliff notes. I'll do my best here. Again, I'm no expert on the subject because I have not been following it with the veracity that many smart people have. Hong Kong is a former British territory. And in the late 80s, early 90s, the territory switched back to Chinese control. So for a while there, Hong Kong was operating separate from China. And since, it has now become part of the country under its own political system. The philosophy was two political systems, one country, right? That was the idea. That was the intent. Long story short, things have not exactly worked out that way. Because when you know it, it gets awfully complicated when communist regimes get involved. What a thunk it. China making it difficult for human rights to flourish. So again, I don't know the particulars, but many in Hong Kong, in fact, most people in Hong Kong, believe that their system of government, although technically separate from Beijing, is still very much in the pockets of Beijing. I'll read this off of BBC.com right now. Hong Kong's leader, the chief executive, is currently elected by a 1,200-member election committee, which is a mostly pro-Beijing body chosen by just 6% of eligible voters. Not all the 70 members of the territory's lawmaking body, otherwise known as the Legislative Council, are directly chosen by Hong Kong's voters. Most seats not directly elected are occupied by pro-Beijing lawmakers. So although they have supposedly a democratic system of government, it's a complete farce. They do not have the power of free elections. They do not have the power of representation. And so a lot of resentment has been building on Hong Kong side of things. This powder keg has been sitting there. Well, just a few months ago, the spark ignited and the power keg blew up. When this extradition bill hit, and here's a little more history about that. So this guy from Hong Kong travels to Taiwan. While he's in Taiwan, he murders his girlfriend. He then travels back to Hong Kong, and the Taiwanese police are like, hey, how about you send the guy back so he can face justice for the crimes that he committed on our land? And Hong Kong was like, nah, man, we don't have extradition. We'll take care of our criminals as we see fit. And so this leads to the Hong Kong extradition bill, which was proposed in April of this year. And it's exactly what it sounds like. If you're a citizen of Hong Kong and you commit a crime in mainland China, Hong Kong is responsible for shipping you back to China to face trial. And many citizens of Hong Kong were not happy about this. And some of them argued that because China doesn't have such a fine reputation of protecting free speech, this law may be used to prosecute journalists and other anti-Beijing types. I suppose their skepticism is well-founded because certainly the Chinese government does not have a perfect A rating for, you know, protecting people's right to say whatever they want. Anyway, this triggers protests. And at first, those demonstrations are fairly peaceful, but they ultimately devolve into violence because that's what tends to happen in situations like this. Now, on the Chinese side, those that are pro-China characterize the Hong Kong protests as a separatist movement. They believe that Hong Kong protesters are not just marching for democracy. They're not just marching to see the extradition bill squashed. They are marching because they want to separate from mainland China altogether. Now, this is sort of an ambiguous area. As far as I know, no Hong Kong protesters have demanded separation from China yet. Perhaps that's where it's going, but as far as I can tell, that's not what this is about. However, within the next 20 years, China is going to have to answer this question because the agreement with the UK is going to be up. I think it's 2049, something like that. It's within the next 20, 25 years or so. So many believe that's where this is going. Again, it's a complicated, murky area. For now, though, this issue is about extradition law and it's about free and fair elections. And Hong Kong protesters, rightfully so, do not believe they have the right to free and fair elections. Now, what does this have to do with the NBA? Basketball's really big in China. Really, 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 really big in China. I don't know the last time you looked at the census, but there's a lot more people in China than there is in the United States. Lots more. In fact, there are more people that watch the NBA Finals this year in China than in the United States. It is simply more popular over there than it is over here. Hard to believe, but it's true. The Chinese people really love the basketball. And by the way, the NBA knows this. Commissioner Adam Silver knows this. And that's why all throughout the preseason, Silver has been making concerted efforts to increase the NBA's presence in China. Chief among these efforts, a preseason game played between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets. The Lakers, of course, being the most popular franchise in all of basketball, and the Nets being the only franchise in the NBA owned by a Chinese person. This was going to be huge. The new look Lakers with LeBron and Anthony Davis. The new look Nets with Kyrie Irving. ESPN, the NBA's broadcast partner, was going to televise a live edition of The Jump from China. It was meant to be a massive display of international commerce, sports fandom. Oh, the fanfare, Adam Silver must have thought to himself. Well, Daryl Morey done fucked that up. Because he tweets out this little bit about the Hong Kong protesters, and the Chinese government goes berserk. They still played the game this past Thursday, and from all reports, it went fairly well. The crowd was supportive of LeBron and the Lakers, and they loved the Nets over there, and they were excited to watch some basketball. But underneath the surface, something sinister was brewing. Each and every one of the NBA's Chinese sponsors have either suspended their partnerships with the league or pulled out altogether. Same goes for the Chinese broadcast networks. This is bad news. Adam Silver knew it right away, and it's all over a tweet. Daryl Morey then deletes the tweet. The owner of the Rockets, Tilman Fertitta, tweets this out just moments later. Listen, ... At Daryl Morey does not speak for the at Houston Rockets. Our presence in Tokyo is all about the promotion of the at NBA internationally, and we are not NOT, all caps, a political organization at ESPN. Adam Silver's response is not much better. He says, oh, so sorry. We deeply offended our friends and fans in China. We regret that. We're not a political organization. We're about unifying through basketball. We just want to play the game. We want to show that basketball can bring people together. We love our fans in China. Adam Silver says, pussy. Oh, Jesus. Yikes. What is that lodged in my throat? Hold on. Wait a minute. Let me try to get that out. Hang on just a second. Fucking coward. Ugh. That is a violent cold. Man, flu season just hit me like a wrecking ball. Let me tell you, folks. One more time. I don't know what's wrong with me here. Scared little bitch. Yikes. Sorry about that. The web that we weave. The web that we weave. Daryl Morey, by the way, had to issue his own apology, or at least his own form of an apology. Quote, I did not intend my tweet to cause any offense to Rockets fans and friends of mine in China. I was merely voicing one thought, based on one interpretation, of one complicated event. I have had a lot of opportunities since that tweet to hear and consider other perspectives. I have always appreciated the significant support our Chinese fans and sponsors have provided, and I would hope that those who are upset will know that offending or misunderstanding them was not my intention. My tweets are my own, and in no way represent the Rockets or the NBA. Of course not. Of course not. It's a complicated situation. Don't want to offend any fans. Oh, by the way, the Nets owner, Joe Tsai, that's the guy's name, founder of Alibaba. Remember I talked about that guy earlier? He issued his own statement calling the Chinese Hong Kong protests a third rail issue in China. Chinese citizens stand united when it comes to the territorial integrity of China, Joe Tsai said, and the country's sovereignty over her homeland. This issue is non-negotiable. Let me explain something, folks. Although the long and storied history of China is not easy to summarize in one tweet or one podcast or one blog post, understand this. It is certainly a complicated situation, and it is one that is perhaps difficult to understand if you don't live in China or Hong Kong. However, it should not be controversial to say that the citizens of Hong Kong, or anywhere else in the world for that matter, should be entitled to free and fair elections. That is not a point of view, it is the point of view. You should not have to defend your support of democracy. And Adam Silver, because he's a smart guy, knows this. And Steve Kerr, because he's a smart guy, knows this. And Greg Popovich, because he's a smart guy, knows this. And every one of the 30 owners in the National Basketball Association knows this. But of course they didn't say shit. Because they love the money more. And we all know that. And you want to know something? That's okay. But next time you start boasting about how brave your league is, how progressive your league is, how pro First Amendment your league is, I don't want to hear about it. Here's Steve Kerr, one of the biggest loudmouths in the National Basketball Association, when asked about the Daryl Morey China situation.
Steve, obviously the big story in the league right now is, you know, Daryl Morey's tweet and everything going on with China. Do you have any thoughts on that situation?
Actually, I don't. I mean, it's a really bizarre international story, and a lot of us are, you know, don't know what to make of it. So it's something I'm reading about, and just like everybody is, but I'm not going to comment further than that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you know nothing about it. Sure. No idea. Oh, funny you should say that. You know who didn't believe you? Donald Trump. Here's the moment I was warning you about, by the way, when I paid Donald Trump a compliment. Here's what he said about Steve Kerr.
Are the Chinese wrong to be putting pressure on the NBA, sir?
Well, the NBA is a different thing. I mean, I watch this guy, Steve Kerr, and he was like a little boy. He was so scared to be even answering the question. He couldn't answer the question. He was shaking. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. He didn't know how to answer the question. And yet he'll talk about the United States very badly. I watched Popovich, sort of the same thing, but he didn't look quite as scared, actually. But they talk badly about the United States, but when it talks about China, they don't want to say anything bad. I thought it was pretty sad, actually.
He's right. He's right. He's entirely right. This is what, by the way, Steve Kerr just said last night in response to Trump and some questions about China. Another press conference.
It has not come up in terms of people asking me about it, people discussing it. No. Nor has our record of human rights abuses come up either. You know, things that our country needs to look at and resolve, that hasn't come up either. So none of us are perfect, and we all have different issues that we have to get to. And saying that is my right as an American doesn't mean that I hate my country. It means I want to address things, right? But people in China didn't ask me about, you know, people owning AR-15s and mowing each other down in a mall. I wasn't asked that question. So we can play this game all we want and go all over the map and, you know, there's this issue and that issue. And the world is a complex place and there's more gray than black and white.
That is a deeply offensive statement. There's no two ways about it. It's a deeply offensive statement. That's a sick, twisted statement. You know, sure, Hong Kong's representatives aren't duly elected. Sure, the Chinese government is censoring the internet, restricting what their citizens can think, read, and say. And sure, there's hundreds and thousands of Muslims stuck in Chinese internment camps. But it's pretty bad over here, too. Fuck off, Steve Kerr. Fuck off. That is one of the most offensive false equivalencies I've ever heard in my life. That is weak as fuck. You want to know what this communist-controlled broadcast network in China said this week in response to the NBA? This one just blew my mind. The CCTV. This is the network that canceled the broadcast of the NBA games. We express our strong dissatisfaction and opposition to Silver's stated support of Maury's right to free speech. We believe any remarks that challenge national sovereignty and social stability do not belong to the category of free speech. We will also immediately examine all other cooperation and exchanges with the NBA. What is happening? You fucking cowards. Let me read that sentence again. We believe any remarks that challenge national sovereignty and social stability do not belong to the category of free speech. If that ain't the most oxymoronic sentence I've ever read in my life. The very existence of that sentence proves you don't have free speech. The fact that you qualified it at all. Like, once you say the word, except for, you no longer have free speech. Yeah, you're allowed to say whatever you want, except, the very fact you have a qualifier means you have no free speech. Free speech don't only apply to certain things. That would make it not free. These are the people? Really? These are the guys we're defending. I don't want to hear that you don't have enough nuance. I don't want to hear that you haven't read up on the issue enough. I don't want to hear James Harden, oh, we love our Chinese fans. We want to unify. I don't want to fucking hear it. Either you're in this fight or you're not. You don't get to have it both ways. And by the way, I'm going to take Steve Kerr at his word when he says he's against police brutality. I'm going to take the league at its word when they pull the All-Star game out of Charlotte over the transgender bathroom situation. I'm going to take LeBron James at his word when he's talking about social inequality on his HBO show. I'm going to take you all at your word. I will not accuse you of being disingenuous. However, you don't get credit for being brave. You don't get credit for speaking truth to power. You don't get credit for being on the side of social justice. Because now is when we need you to be brave. Now is when we need you in the fight. Now is when we need you to stand up for basic human rights. Not then. Folks, bravery is courage in the face of danger. And the truth is, when Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich and LeBron James on his HBO show speak with great courage on social issues, there is no danger. They don't face boycotts. They don't face protests. No sponsors will withdraw their support. No government forces will attempt to censor them. Their fabulous lifestyles will not be hurt one iota, because the NBA fan base is dominated by progressives. So why wouldn't it help? You're allowed to take the money from China. You're allowed to sell your soul. You're allowed to stay silent on the human rights violations of the Chinese government. What you are not allowed to do is take credit for being brave. You're hypocrites, you're cowards, and everyone now sees you for who you are. Oh, sorry to get on my high horse. Oh, this one pissed me off. Oh, Nico was steaming this week, baby. Was not happy about this. Oh, Steve Kerr pushed me over the edge yesterday. Woo-wee! And by the way, you know, this just always is, it's just a pattern that I always see reoccurring. Like, if you want moral guidance on the issues of the world, look to South Park. Matt Stone and Trey Parker are the only ones that got this right. As always. Fuck the Chinese government, they said on a recent episode of South Park. Look no further. And by the way, this is something that's not just happening with the NBA. That's why it's so important to follow these stories. I'm not a big Twitch guy, but there was this situation with this game Hearthstone. I don't know if you guys know about this. I was just reading into it last night. This Chinese player of the game Hearthstone, he's a Twitch streamer, was suspended from the game for a year because I guess Hearthstone is partially owned by a Chinese company, and he spoke out against the Chinese government and in favor of Hong Kong. And so all over the world, people are caving to the pressures of China. Just look for the money, man. Just follow the money. This is what happens. This is what happens when a communist regime has this much power and influence. And if you want to say anything good about Donald Trump, which there's not much good to say, like, dude should probably be impeached. This Ukraine thing's probably going to lead to impeachment. Who knows if he's going to get elected again? Whatever you want to say about the guy, the one thing that he's been very salient on is relations with China. There's no, that is definitely a concern that everyone should be attuned to. It's really scary, really dangerous. Everyone's just caving. They have the sneaker companies, they have the factories, they have the money, and they have an incredibly high military budget. So no one wants to fuck with China. Yeah, they're dangerous. They're really dangerous. And you should read up on this story because it's very illuminating. All right, I'm done. Now a quick story. I'm cleaning out my bedroom. I'm going through my drawers. I have so much shit in there. I'm a borderline hoarder. I mean, I'm pretty neat. I'd say I'm a fairly neat person. Like, my room is well-kept and everything. There's just a lot of shit in it. There's a lot of papers, a lot of useless knickknacks, and I'm trying to throw shit out. It's very therapeutic to do that, too. Go clean your room. It's a fun time. And I'm shuffling through the drawers, and I stumbled upon, I stumbled upon a script. And just all these memories came rushing back. You may know that I dabble in screenwriting from time to time. I've written some things. I'm not very good yet, but maybe one day I will be. It turns out my career began in the fifth grade with a stage play called The Mystery Person. The Mystery Person. I remember writing this with a friend of mine, my buddy Dom, back in the fifth grade. I was, what, 10 years old? This was 2005, 2006? Jesus, 14 years ago. We wrote this thing. I think it was like an assignment for the class. Everybody had to write a play. We submitted this play to a traveling children's theater company called Child's Play. And I found this script along with a certificate from Child's Play. This company takes plays written by 8, 9, 10-year-olds and adapts them for the screen and performs it in front of other kids. It's a real thing that happened. So Dom and I submit this play. Apparently, it was good enough to meet their standards, and they performed the damn thing at my school. It was a very bizarre thing. I had to like go up on stage, and they gave me a certificate, and I saw the words that I typed performed. And it's so weird. I don't really talk about that all that much. For some reason, I've just buried it in my subconscious. Man, that is, it's such a formative moment, isn't it? That instant satisfaction that I got, I think I've been chasing it ever since. There was something about seeing someone else perform my work and people laughing and reacting to it the way that they were supposed to react to it that really affected me. Now, I want to point out, the screenplay is written by a 10-year-old. It's very bad. It's actually worse than I remember it being. But I thought it would be fun as a trip down memory lane to perform this for you on the show. So I enlisted the help of my younger sister, Gabby, who will be reading some of the parts. I enlisted my co-host and Why Is This a Thing, Nick Evangelista, to play the part of the narrator. So you will hear Nick's voice interspersed throughout the play. He plays the narrator. Gabby plays a young boy named Steve, a character named Dad, and a 911 operator. And I play a young boy named Luke, and Mystery Man. I believe those are the parts. Yes. Steve and Luke are brothers. Dad is their father. Mystery Man, you will learn something about as the play goes on. Nick Evangelista will be holding your hand through every step of the process. And I guess I'm just going to let this thing speak for itself. Here it is, the first ever script written by Nico DiGregorio at age 10, The Mystery Person.
The telephone rings. Steve picks up the phone.
Hello? Yes, hold on. Luke, go tell Dad it's for him.
Okay.
Luke walks to the bottom of the stairs.
Dad, there's someone on the phone that wants to talk to you.
Dad, from offstage.
Okay, I'll be right there.
Steve picks up the phone.
Hold on a second.
The doorbell rings. Luke, looking at Steve.
I'll take the phone. You go get the door.
Luke takes the phone from Steve.
Hello? You still there? Hello?
The door opens.
Hi.
Steve slams the door.
That's the guy on the phone. I can recognize him by his voice.
Oh no! Dad's not answering!
I'll go upstairs and see what's wrong.
Steve goes upstairs.
He's not here!
The doorbell rings. The doorknob rattles.
Luke, quickly call 911!
Luke picks up the phone and dials 911.
Hello, what is the emergency?
Yes, there's someone at the door that was just on the phone, and now he's trying to get in! He has a blue shirt with dice on it and black pants!
We'll be right there.
There's a knock on the door. Mystery Man opens the door.
Hello? Anybody home? Ah! Hey! Didn't you order a pizza?
Dad walks downstairs and gets the door.
Yes, I did.
That'll be $16.24.
Thanks.
So there you go. The mystery person. It should come as no surprise to you that that theater company is no longer in existence. They have since gone out of business. Turns out the financial model, not sustainable. Who would have thunk it? They were performing plays like this. How do you not just make a killing off of plays like The Mystery Person? Unbelievable. Very specific stage directions in there. I don't know why I needed to put a narrator saying the telephone rings while also including the sound effect ring, ring, ring. I should mention, I did not change a word of this play. I don't know if you could tell. It's as crisp today as the day I wrote it. I will say this. Kind of discouraging how many of the bad habits I've kept since the fifth grade. A lot of plot holes. A lot of logical inconsistencies. A lot of broad comedy. You know, I just like a simple punchline. I just like ending scenes on a note. I don't know what to tell you. Man. So terrible, but all too real. Yeah, this is about the level of material I'm still writing. Thanks to Gabby and Nick for playing that stupid game with me. I hope you enjoyed The Mystery Person as much as I did writing it. Let's shift gears. Oh, you know, do I even want to? We've done so much politics today. I wanted to talk about Ellen, and I wanted to get on my soapbox and get mad, but I'm not going to get mad because, again, I've been already very upset on this podcast, and I want to shift to a more positive tone because, ultimately, that's what Ellen would like. I love Ellen, all right? I really like Ellen as a human being. I think we would all do ourselves a lot of good emulating Ellen's behavior in all ways. If you just ask the question, what would Ellen do? I feel like we'd be happier people. Dancing with the audience, having sex with a beautiful woman, treating people with kindness. There's nothing Ellen does that I don't want to do myself. So look, let's just go for compassion. Okay, I will refrain from the George Bush criticisms on this podcast. I'm not going to touch him with a 10-foot pole. All I'm going to say is two people sat next to each other at a football game and they seemed to have a good time. I don't know. I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, just hot take. Two people at a football game hacking it up, having a good time with the Jerry Jones family. All of a sudden, we're calling for NATO to intervene. What's happening here, people? What are we doing? Everybody settle the hell down. We don't need to open up a UN discussion over Ellen and George Bush at a Cowboys game. No, I'm not going to do this. I'm staying away. Actually, no, I am going to do this. Fuck it. What did you want Ellen to do? What did you want her to throw down a list of grievances? Do you want her to slap George Bush across the face? What did you want Ellen to do to the former president for his supposed war crimes? I'm not even going to touch that shit. Let's assume for a second, all of the crazy George Bush haters are 100% accurate when they describe George Bush as a war criminal and murderer. Let's take them at their word and say, yes, you're right about that. Let's assume, okay? Even if you were, which you're not, but even if you were, what did you want Ellen DeGeneres to do about it? What did you want? Did you want her to shoot him in the head right on the spot? What is the grievance with Ellen? I understand the grievances with George Bush. What are the grievances with Ellen? Unbelievable. She sat next to him at a football game. They had a good time. Ellen's a Packers fan. What the hell? What do you want out of your talk show hosts? And by the way, we talked about this earlier, right? We talked about it with Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr has entered the realm of political criticism, right? He has entered the ballgame. So now, all's fair in love and war, right? The second Steve Kerr speaks about social issues, advocates for human rights, criticizes those in the American government, he is now held to the same standard when it comes to the Chinese government, right? That's fair to say. What the hell has Ellen done? Like, you'd think by this criticism, you would assume George Bush is running for re-election in 2020 and Ellen DeGeneres is going to be his running mate. Dick Cheney as the campaign manager. That's what you would have assumed given the outcry here. I mean, come on. What did you want her to do about it? It's crazy. All right, I'm done. I'm getting out. I'm tapping out. Enough politics. I'm out. Goodbye. This has been the Nico Show. Go Yankees, baby. I'm back on the bandwagon. It's everyone's favorite time of year. Playoff baseball. Yankees in the playoffs. Nico's a Yankee fan again. Fuck yeah. Man, this Astros series is going to be tough. I am gearing up for what is going to be one of the great ALCS's. Is that the pluralization of that word? One of the great American League series of my life between the Astros and the Yankees. I think it's going to go 7. Yankees better win game 1. That's all I know. Astros looked vulnerable, but it's hard to beat a team like that. Especially coming off of that Tampa series where it feels like they escaped. You know, it feels like they dodged a bullet and now they're untouchable. Now they're just going to cakewalk to the end. I don't know. But I'm a Yankee fan again. So send me your love, your prayers, and your support on social media this week because I will not be able to breathe 7 nights out of the next 10. All right. I love you. And I'll be back sooner rather than later. I think this is going to be kind of a new template for this show. I'm going to try to incorporate more bits. I'm going to try to get more people on. I want this to be more of a variety show than it's been because there are so many podcasts of me just talking, but I want to play around with other stuff. So we'll see what happens. Maybe next week, maybe 2 weeks from now, maybe once a month. It's looking like more monthly than weekly, but we'll see. The Nico Show is an ever-evolving project. And I just thank you so much for sticking with me along the way. Over 5 years of the Nico Show, by the way. I missed that anniversary last month, but beginning of September, 5 years of the Nico Show. Absolutely astounding. I love you more today than I did the day I met you, internet. All right, come back next week. Because you know what happens then. You're going to finally hear the story. Story you've been waiting your whole life for. And it's the story of Lord Steve!